go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. That's Ben over there.
Whoa, Scott. You're Scott.
I am.
And you're changing it up.
I changed it up, yes. The usual intro, you know, it's kind of got a rhythm to it, but I decided it was time for a little bit of a change.
Yeah. I am going to roll with it.
All right. We'll switch it back next time.
We'll switch it back. Okay, cool, because you know how I fear change.
I do know that, yeah.
No, literally, like quarters and nickels. I don't want to touch them. That's a true story. We're starting out weird today, folks, but don't fret. We are still joined, of course, by our super producer team, Tristan and Dylan. I'm going to call him Convoy Fagan.
Oh, I love that word, Convoy.
Yeah, man. I was listening to that song sort of prepping for today's episode like four or five times consecutively before we hopped in the studio. I'm pretty sure I know all the lyrics, and I don't know why I go through these phases sometimes, Scott, where I just have to watch the movie and listen to the song over and over again for like an afternoon.
No, absolutely. And that's just one of those words that like once it hits your, you know, your brain, you think of that movie or you think of that song or, you know, some type of memory attached to it. You know, if you haven't seen it, check it out because it's a decent movie. I mean, I guess not a great movie, but it's a good song.
Convoy.
Yeah. Oh, and, you know, thinking about this, that was like one that I'd always sing along with when I was a kid in the car because it was on the radio at the time. I mean, if you want to date, how long ago this was, but also the other one was it Rhinestone Cowboy?
Uh-huh.
That was another one. Yeah. Right around the same time, I think. So as a kid, I loved those songs. But today we were going to be talking about the trucking industry. And, you know, we had kind of tossed around the idea of calling it trucking secrets or, you know, 10 things you don't know about trucks or trucking. So our trucker friends are going to say, well, this is all stuff I know. And that's good because, I mean, you know, they're immersed in the world of this. But this podcast really is going to be for everybody else, all the sedan drivers, all the motorcycle drivers, all the people that don't have any seat time at the behind the wheel in a big rig.
Because it's a very different world. And it's strange how pervasive the trucking industry is. This disclaimer is necessary. Our examination today explores the world of trucking in the United States. So there may be similarities to other parts of the world, but there are also going to be some profound differences. Like Australia is a great example. Australia's trucking industry has one of the most interesting aspects of trucking worldwide.
Yeah, we'll call it trucking with a twist.
Yeah, road trains, man. Yeah. And we have an episode about those. So check it out if you haven't heard of this before.
Road trains are fascinating. And the pictures, the photographs.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah, man. I feel like you could survive a Mad Max situation if you had a road train.
It seems like you
could build your own little world.
It kind of feels like something out of a Mad Max movie, really.
It really does.
Yeah. It's probably partially due to the terrain, you know?
Yeah.
Just the look. Like every time you see one of those, that's why.
And the fact that to us, these are amazing and unique because you know, they're not a daily part of our lives.
No, if we see a double trailer, it's like, what is going on around here?
Mm-hmm. What sort of strange voodoo is this? But regardless of whether it's double trailer, single trailer, it is almost impossible to hop in a car here in the States and drive without seeing a semi.
Yeah, and we had talked off air about how, you know, trucks appear at the strangest places too. It's not,
sure.
we're not talking about just semis. These are all kinds of trucks, but semis in particular in this case, when you're on a small back road and suddenly the semi truck passes you and you think, what is that person doing on this road? Why are they here? I never see semis back here, but, there's a reason. We'll briefly touch on that later. But if you're on the interstate or freeway system here in the United States, you're guaranteed to see, you know, it seems like trucks are everywhere. And there's a good reason behind that. I mean, you know, we've discussed other forms of transporting goods and services.
Sure.
Not service, goods, I guess.
Like air cargo and cargo boats.
Yeah, and rail, of course.
And rail.
That's another one. But trucking falls into the sweet spot of where, you know, it's not quite as expensive as air freight. It's not quite as slow as – it's faster than rail transport.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, boat, traveling by cargo ship or something like that, that has its own – special set of circumstances. Yeah, it's location, right?
It's its own world. Mm-hmm. Like, if these various modes of transport were the Justice League, I know I'm going through comic book phase too, man. If they were, you know, all superheroes in the Justice League, then cargo ships are very much Aquaman.
Well, and
like, they're useful in a specific situation. And plus, I mean, bad comic book references aside, the truth of the matter is that right now, trucking provides the most agile transportation solution.
Well, sure. And look at those cargo ships. I can't let this pass without saying it. The cargo ships are stacked, you know, what seems like 20 levels high with what is essentially the back end of the semi truck.
Right.
You know, those containers, those mm-hmm. crates that they can stack on top of one another. So really the cargo ship industry relies heavily on the trucking industry. And, you know, the trucking industry is kind of the go between, the link between the other types of transport. Mm-hmm. So trucking is a vital, vital part of life in the United States and really all around the world. And again, this podcast is not necessarily going to open the eyebrow, you know, like raise the eyebrows. Mm-hmm. of any trucker. They're not going to say like, oh, I didn't know that. All the truckers know what we're going to talk about, and they know more about it than we do because we're just, you know, casual observers, I guess, in this case. But we're trying to get some of this information out there for the people that have to, and I'll say deal with, but deal with trucks on the highway every day mm-hmm. because there's a lot of situations where truckers may do something that seems unusual to you and I.
Right.
But there's a reason behind what they do. They have training that tells them to do that. And that's why that happens. And I've got a list of, there's about eight or so different things mm-hmm. that I want to get to at some point today. But yeah. There's more to it, to the story than just, you know, these unusual behaviors. We're also going to talk about some things that, you know, just a lot of people like, you know, again, people in sedans, people in motorcycles, people in, the family minivan or whatever.
Right.
Like they don't understand or don't know what's really going on inside that cab.
We want to thank the listeners who wrote into us over the years. It's weird that I say it that way, but it's accurate. Especially William H, who wrote in recently asking us about how semi trucks work and, you know, sort of the origin stories of those companies, like Freightliner and Mack and so on.
And you and I have talked about this particular email because there have been a few of them over the years that have come in to say like, hey, I'd like to hear about Kenworth. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to find out about that company. And honestly, what we'll do is we'll look into several of these trucking companies because we've done just truck episodes, you know, like just how trucks came about or pickup trucks other things like that. And, we want to find a story that's actually it's got some twists, some turns in it, kind of like the U-Haul story maybe,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, something like that where there's a point where things turn a different way than you might expect. So, we want to find something like that, something that grabs you. So we're going to really dig into that and find a good example to cover. As far as how semi trucks work, I mean, that might get into some complex things like, you know, the gearboxes and the engines and the sizes and the manufacturers and, the histories and stuff like that. But, right now this is not that in depth. This is going to be more like, I don't know. There's some surprising things to sedan drivers.
Do you remember those old PSAs with the More You Know logo?
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be like the more you know about trucking secrets. But to establish this, we want to open with some stats on the industry as a whole. And these come from the American Trucking Association. In 2014, there were 31.4 million trucks registered and used for business purposes, excluding governments and farm work, right?
Yeah, that's a lot of trucks.
That's a lot of trucks. But check this out, Scott. In 2014 alone, these trucks drove a total of 279.1 billion miles.
Billion with a B.
Billion with a B.
That is also a lot of miles, a lot of trucks, a lot of miles. And, you know, I think we should point out here right now that to be in the trucking industry, you don't necessarily have to drive a semi-truck or a tractor trailer.
That's true.
So, you know, this could be somebody who drives a school bus or the mailman or a FedEx delivery person or tow trucks or, you know, everybody who's driving a truck to haul goods in some way is a trucker. They're in the trucking industry, and that's a huge group of people, way bigger than I thought. There was an article written by a person named Anna Kleiner over at Concentra, of all places. That's a healthcare provider.
Right.
They wrote an article about trucking, and they said that about 15% of American employees work in trucking. And I thought, that can't be right. 15% of all workers in the United States work somehow in the trucking industry. Now, I would guess that's, you know, dispatch, or maybe it's in, you know, truck maintenance, or it's, they're not all truck drivers, but 15% is a high percentage.
Right.
So, you know, these are the people that, you know, are responsible for safe, fast delivery of things that you use every single day. And that, again, that includes mailmen or mail persons, I guess, maybe I should say. Anybody that's delivering something from Amazon.
Sure.
Unless it's a, you know, a car, I guess. Maybe that's the one exception, because I've seen that too. But, there are so many examples of truck drivers out there. People that are delivering furniture, people that are delivering, food, you know, from, you know, like the farm right to the grocery store. Hey, you know what? One quick, side note.
Yeah.
I tried farming for a little while.
No, did you really?
For a short time, I had set up a, like a small farm. It was an organic farm. And I tried it for a couple of years, but there was this, like the hardest part to me, Ben, and this is why I eventually gave it up, is because I just had a difficult time getting up every single morning. I had to milk all those almonds. And it was really, really rough on me. What?
Oh, man. I did want to say this, but you kind of have the look of a frustrated almond farmer.
Those tiny little, never mind.
You had me going for a second.
I would
be surprised. You're a man of mystery. I wouldn't put it past you to have a murky past in the farm industry
of almond milking,
driven out of Michigan for almond fraud.
Is that a
crime?
I don't know, but maybe it should be.
So let's look at it this way. We said 15% of American employees. Another way to look at this is 1 in 7 U.S. jobs are, I prefer the term, associated with trucking.
Yeah.
So you can work in the trucking industry and not actually be driving the rig. You might, for instance, be someone who works with logistics or supply chains, both of which are crucial. You might broker transportation deals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I would argue, even if you're loading trucks with stuff from a cargo ship, that counts as working in trucking.
I think it kind of does. Yeah. I mean, so associated with is probably a better way to look at this whole
thing. Right.
And so, Ben, here's another situation, I guess, another number where you're going to have to really, I don't know, maybe take into account where you're hearing statistics for, you know, who they're coming from.
Right.
Because,
we
said this before, that the trucking industry will say that, they're responsible for shipment of most goods in the United States. Mm-hmm. And the rail industry will say they're responsible for the lion's share of the goods across the nation. And these numbers can be kind of skewed a little bit either way. Not a lot, but a little bit.
It really depends on how each organization defines the parameters of their situation.
Well, right? Exactly right. I mean, there's going to be qualifiers with every single one of these, but in this article, again, from the Concentra article, which again, we'll get off the Concentra article in just a moment, but one of the numbers that they state here is that 80% or more than 80% of American communities depend on trucking for delivery, or trucks for delivery. And I believe that number because, that's clothing, that's groceries, that's, you know, books, that's products like, you know, cooking products, furniture, whatever it happens to be. We had said also, Ben, that, you can't really like drive down to the train depot and pick stuff up right off the train and throw it in your own car
typically.
And take it home. You can't go to the airport and grab something, you know, box off the plane and load it into your minivan and drive it home. It requires trucking in between. So trucking does play a huge role in some of the other types of transport. But everything that you order has to be packaged, shipped, and delivered, you know, from the distributor to your doorstep. So, you know, you probably do rely on trucks more than you think. When you really consider every aspect of this, you know, I mean, 80% of American communities depend on trucks for delivery.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that number.
Yeah, I believe that too, especially since we're defining trucking as including anything associated. So more than just long haul semi-trailers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And in some cases, it's a short distance. Other times, you know, like rural communities, things are being trucked a much greater distance to get to them. Like let's say they fly into the main hub, you know, here in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And they have to fly out to, you know, somewhere, you know, distant. Let's say it's, and not too distant, but let's say it's, Helen, Georgia.
Okay.
You know, so it's up in the mountains.
Yeah.
But it takes them 3 hours to get there or whatever. That's a truck ride to get there. So, you know, that's X number of miles that it's driven by truck and that community would rely on trucking. So it's, again, it's kind of a gray area. You know,
it can get slippery.
Yeah, it can.
I would like to explore this great article we found, which is from a comedy website.
Ah. I know the one you're going for.
Yeah, yeah. But this was, you found this one too. This was a list of, quote, terrifying things only truckers know about the highway. This is not a, safe for work article, I guess, depending on where you work.
Yeah, not so much family friendly, maybe, if you want to put it that way. This is maybe, it's PG-13, I would say.
Yeah.
But a strong PG-13.
Yeah, yeah. But don't worry. We'll
clean
make
it
sure.
Up.
We'll keep it classy.
Yeah, we'll clean it up a little bit.
So we'll just walk through this real quick, because if you are, you know, driving a sedan on a daily basis, you might not know about these things that truckers routinely encounter.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So the first one, they come right out of the gate with this one, Scott. The first one is that multiple truckers, and I can confirm this because one of my uncles runs a trucking company, multiple truckers see people behaving in sexually inappropriate ways while they're driving.
Yeah. Various stages of undress.
Sure.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And at all times of day, all times of night.
All kinds of people.
All kinds of people. Some alone, some with other people.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of things.
So that's the thing that, first off, I feel like it's risky to check your phone at a stoplight. I don't know how these people are pulling this thing off, you know?
I don't know, Ben. There's, you know, there's a lot I'd like to say right here, but I probably shouldn't.
We're a family show.
Yeah, exactly. So I think some people are just a little bit more comfortable with it, with that. You know, they'd be okay checking their phone at the light, of course.
Sure. I'm sure that's
of course
not something that they fret about.
No.
But there's an important thing here, because due to just the height of the cab,
yeah,
what I think a lot of people in sedans don't realize is that it is very, very easy for a driver or a passenger in a semi to see everything that's going on in the vehicles next to them.
Everything. And if you doubt this, take a look online, do whatever kind of word search you want to do for this, and you'll see a view from their vantage point, and you will be surprised at just how much they can see into your vehicle. Now, tinted windows or not, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. There's different times of day play into that as well, you know, the sunlight, et cetera.
Sure.
But, some people are in it to be seen. And other people are trying to be a little bit more secretive about it. But in both cases, you know, it's seen either way.
I don't want to sound like a prude.
No.
But can't you wait till you get home? Or like there are motels everywhere.
Yeah. Just, man, I don't know.
But here's the,
have a cold drink or something. Yeah. Relax.
Right. Take a walk. Take a lap.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, here's one of the things though. This sounds like maybe one of those folklore, urban legend type events that's perhaps more widely reported than it actually occurs. However, apparently it's so common that some truckers say one of the easy ways to spot a rookie driver or a newbie trucker is when they start blowing up the radio, blowing up the CB, saying, oh, whoa, watch out. These people are messing around in this car. Because they don't understand how common it is.
Because it's just happening everywhere. It's like, oh, it's just old hat at this point, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's old hat.
Yeah.
So here's another one that's less.
I got that saying right, didn't I? It's old
hat
at this point.
Yeah, you got
right?
it.
Oh, wow. That's one for me.
Well done, man.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. You knocked that one out of the park. Although I have to admit, I don't know where old hat comes from.
Neither do I.
I imagine it's literally an older hat.
I'm sure it's a very old saying.
I'm sure it's fair. Old hat is old hat now. Here's another one that's a little more family friendly, but definitely more important for any driver.
Yeah.
People should know this.
Sure. And this is one that we had talked about just briefly in the very intro. And I said, remember when you see that truck on the road that you don't think belongs on that type of road, you know, a smaller road?
Yeah. What are you doing on this mountain with these switchbacks?
Yeah. Well, it happens. And some of the reason why that happens now, okay, so there could be the reason that, you know, there's a local delivery. They have to be there. They have to, you know, it's a moving van and they're moving someone into a neighborhood and mm-hmm. they have to go down this road to get to it. That happens all the time. Or it's, you know, a grocery store or something that's kind of out of the way. It's a rural community.
Right.
This is a pass through, but you don't normally see them. It's infrequent. You know, other times the problem is GPS. GPS that a lot of trucking companies require their drivers to use because it takes them the shortest route in, you know, every situation.
Mm-hmm.
The GPS doesn't always know that, you know, that kind of go-between road, the one between the two main highways that you're trying to cross, is something that is really almost impossible to navigate with, you know, a 60-foot long trailer.
Right.
If not impossible to navigate. So they often get stuck in bad situations, you know, like a turn that they can't make without knocking over a lamp pole. It happens. Or, you know, they drive through a small town where there's just not enough room for that type of truck on the road. And, you know, they take up more than their lane. You know, it's an older town with narrow lanes, and it just makes everybody, I'll say suffer, but it's not really suffering. It's an inconvenience for other people. But that happens too. So, it's not always the trucker's fault that they get put in these bad situations.
No, like, no.
As this guy says, this article says here in Cracked, it says, consider that truck as like a spider, someone that's probably more afraid of you than you are of them, because they really shouldn't be on that road, and they know they shouldn't be on that road. They'll probably get a ticket if they're caught on that road.
Right.
Because, you know, the weight limits or whatever, but GPS inadvertently led them to that road. And, you know, what are you going to do at that point? You can't throw it in reverse and back up to the highway. Mm. You have to find your way out.
And that goes to a bigger thing that we'll explore in a little more depth, which is how tight the timetables can be.
Yeah, so GPS plays heavily into this.
Right. Let's see. We talked about sexual inappropriateness. We talked about ending up on the wrong roads.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's one thing that we've heard a lot of rumors about, which would be, what's the best way to say it, Scott? Like the criminal underbelly of trucking.
Well, you're talking about like drug dealers.
Right.
And prostitution.
Yep.
And, I guess, well, not just the dealers, but the people that are buying the drugs, people mm-hmm. that are using the drugs. And this all happens at truck stops. It happens at rest stops. It happens, you know, just about anywhere that truckers gather. And I don't think it's really, boy, how do I want to put this? It's not that everybody does this, of course.
No, it's just that, often people who are trucking professionals have encountered or like seen this stuff happening.
Sure.
So it's around, you know, we looked at a little bit of the statistics about how law enforcement approaches this, mm-hmm. but the truth of the matter is it's going to continue. Now you shouldn't believe any fiction on television, right? Inspired by this sort of crime associated with truck stops. Because it's probably going to be sensationalized and alarmist,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
But it is a fact.
Yeah, it's readily available. You know, all the things that we've talked about are readily available at these lots, and some choose to partake and some choose not to partake. And, you know, it's funny. You know, you've heard tales of truckers using meth to stay awake for long, long periods of time to get across, you know, the whole country in one
right.
shot. I think I've heard, you know, tales of bike gangs doing the same thing, you know, so they can go from, you know, East Coast to West Coast or vice versa. Sure, that probably happens, but it's not the, it's not the common, I guess. It's not the,
right.
it's not the rule. They're probably the exception to the rule. They're not the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, and there's another thing, and this I think is crucial and inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
This is probably one of the most unappreciated jobs in the U.S., or at least I would say undervalued, because as we've said, these people are literally the reason you are able to buy stuff in a store.
Yeah.
Whatever the store is, doesn't usually matter. And there's a high demand for truckers at this point.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. In fact, just about every truck that you pass has a sign on that says, we're hiring. Here's a phone number to call. But what that means is there's also likely a high rate of turnover. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But this gets – we're kind of undercutting what our number two item on this list is here. And that is that it's surprisingly easy to get a trucking license.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think that that'd be something that's simple to get. But do you remember the old, you know, the commercials on television? I don't know if they still do these or not, but where you can
to get your CDL?
Yeah, you can get your CDL, but you can also get a degree in welding or sewing or,
uh-huh.
you know, whatever. And they listed, you know, 50 different professions that you can get a degree in something like 2 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
maybe 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's surprisingly easy to get a trucking license from, a diploma mill, as these truckers in this article call it,
right.
called a trucking school. And I guess that's the most basic form of education that you can get for this type of job go to a trucking school, just get a quick diploma and you're on the road. But a lot of, just so that this is clear,
mm-hmm.
a lot of trucking companies will then require further training of their drivers because they don't want somebody that just came out of a trucking school that only has, you know, X number of weeks of training or X number of hours of on-road experience behind the wheel of their big rig. And understandably so. I mean, they're carrying, let's say they're carrying $500,000 worth of, you know, product on, in the back end. Who knows how much that, that big rig costs and, you know, the tractor trailer part of it. So, you know, it makes sense that they would want their employees to have more training.
Sure.
The problem is that there's a huge rate of turnover in this job as well. I mean, an extremely high number. Shockingly high number.
Yeah. Yeah. Lay it on me.
97% turnover.
It's insane, especially when you consider, I don't know how you feel about this, Scott, but I'm a big believer in experience. I think experience goes much further than, you know, in school training.
Yeah.
So a lot of folks who are listening now who are experienced truckers, probably do notice behaviors that newer truckers exhibit that they're probably going to have to get rid of over time. But 97%?
97%. And I think that what this takes into account is that, you know, there, sure, there's some companies that, you know, guys or girls will sign on with early on and stay their whole career with them. You know, that they'll go from end to end. The ones that they're talking about are the, you know, the companies that are more about, you know, cutting costs. You know, or that they would feel more comfortable, I guess, if you can call it this, putting unexperienced drivers on the road where you would think that would be more trouble than it's worth, but it's not to them. The way they see it is they want to keep the costs low. So they're willing to hire these inexperienced drivers in order to just get the bodies on the road and get the product there.
Right.
Even if that means that they lose a truck here or there, or they have some incidents on the road. I mean, that's not the greatest way to think about it, obviously. The other thing is that, you know, fuel is a huge expense. So, you know, one solution that they've come up with is to make the CDL, you know, just really, really easy to attain. And then the wages that they can pay these unexperienced drivers is extremely low. You know, you can get that CDL easy, and then you can get into a trucking job that pays very, very low, but they don't really care. They just want to get the product there. And again, they'll kind of wipe all these incidents under the rug for as long as they can, and then just get a new batch of young, inexperienced drivers in. And it's a terrible system. And some of the, again, some of the older truckers, as you said, don't like seeing this trend happen. But again, a 97% turnover. And that's, they said that that's after the numbers have dropped a little bit. This was back in 2013, I think these numbers come from. I don't know. The way they put it in the article is that that means that statistically speaking, every driver you see is both new on the job and about to quit at the same time.
Oh, wow. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So that means that a lot of these new drivers that you see on the road are more preoccupied with thinking about their next career move than whether you're currently inside their wheel well. That's how they put it in the article.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, like they're more focused on what's going on outside of the cab than what's going on inside the cab. And that's not a good place to be.
This leads to an immediate question, which is, why is that turnover rate so high? And we will answer it, at least partially, after a word from our sponsor.
And we're back. And Ben, you had kind of hinted that we were going to talk about maybe an answer to, you know, to why that's happening.
Yes. It turns out that overwhelmingly, truckers are paid by the mile. And this is, quote, insanely dangerous.
I agree.
The authors make the case here that trucking differs from a lot of other careers because it's really tough to project how much money you're actually going to make, because you're paid by how far you go, not how much time you spend driving.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. There's some rule restrictions, or I should say hour restrictions,
yes,
that truck drivers have. And if you want, I can talk about those for just a moment.
Yeah, please do.
All right. So I got the latest set of stats here, the latest set of figures that will tell us how long a trucker can be on the road from a place called the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. You can look these up online. The version that I'm looking at was updated on March 9th of 2017, so it's very recent. And there's a couple of different hours of service rules that apply to different types of trucking. Now, we had said, you know, trucking encompasses a lot of different types of trucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just over the road haulers, you know, that are on the road all night, and semis,
tow trucks.
Yeah, it's everything. Passenger carrying drivers. So, you know, if you're driving a charter bus or something like that too. So there's two different categories for service rules. There's property-carrying drivers, and then there's passenger-carrying drivers. For property-carrying drivers, the semis that we see on the highway, they are limited to 11 hours of driving time. That's maximum. That's every day. They can drive 11 hours, but that's only after 10 consecutive hours off-duty. So there are these restrictions that are put on not only just the number of hours you can drive, but the restrictions are also on how much time you have to have in between. You can't break that up into a different way. So like you drove 11 hours, but that was after, you know, 3 hours and then a 2 hour break and then another 3 hours and another 1 hour break. And you can't chop it up that way. Now for passenger carrying drivers, they have a 10 hour drive in limit, you know, maximum per day. And that's after 8 consecutive hours off duty. And then, Ben, there's another couple of line items here that I want to mention that go along with the property carrying and the passenger carrying that I think we should mention. I'll read it, but I think that the way I've got it kind of picked apart in my mind is right. But you tell me if you think you agree.
All right.
So there's also a 14-hour limit on property carrying drivers. But that is okay, here's what it says. The driver may not drive beyond the 14th consecutive hour after coming on duty following 10 consecutive hours off duty. Off duty time does not extend the 14-hour period. So here's what I think that means. And I may be getting this right or might be getting this wrong. I think what they're talking about is, you know, downtime when you're waiting at the dock somewhere.
Mm.
I think that you, you know, are allowed a certain amount of time to wait while, you know, someone unloads your truck and then you get back on the road. So that I think is what plays into this. For passenger carrying drivers, that's a 15-hour limit. Again, I think that this means if you drop somebody off at a stop, like say you take a tour group to a museum and you have to wait for them for 4, 5, or 6 hours, I think that extends the amount of time that you're allowed to be on the road because you've had that break in between.
Hmm.
But I could be wrong. I hope I'm not reading this wrong. Again, it's a law that I'm not familiar with. I just read about it this morning and thought I would bring it in here because, you know, the 11-hour driving limit with the 10 hours off for property and then 10-hour driving limit with 8 hours off for passenger seems to be just kind of the general rule that everybody follows. That it has to be the rule they follow.
Yeah.
And they keep logs that tell, you know, anybody that might pull them over, a police officer, you know, here's my latest. And some of these are electronic as well,
mm-hmm.
electronic driving logs.
And this begins to show the tough situation that a lot of truckers are finding themselves in increasingly because you're pushing against the clock, you know, and you're also pushing against mileage. And especially if you're a contractor, you have existing overhead costs that you have to worry about. We haven't even got into the cost of gas and how that works out state by state.
That's a huge one. Or the limits placed on that.
Because mm-hmm.
there are certain states that only allow you to buy, you know, X number of gallons. I think California was listed as, you know, one that they can only buy 50 gallons of fuel in. That's the maximum.
Yeah, and that can go pretty fast, right?
Yeah.
Let's put some hard numbers behind this.
Okay.
The American Trucking Association, again, this is one of the best resources for this information. In 2016, it looked like the labor shortage was going to be up to 48,000 drivers. And over the next 10 years, that could bloom to 170,000.
Whoa.
Which automatically poses a threat to multiple aspects of the American economy.
Sure. Yeah, of course it does. Those are huge numbers. And Ben, I think this would be a good place to mention here that, you know, we're talking about all these rules and regulations that apply to truckers. And there are a lot of truckers that don't follow the rules because they realize they won't make enough money to keep themselves on the road any longer. So, they feel that if they don't kind of skirt the edge of the rules, they don't bend the rules a little bit, that they won't necessarily be able to make enough money to continue what they're doing, what they love to do. So, you know, some of these rules and restrictions are so restricting that they're unable to continue on, you know, unless they find a way around it. Some of them have resorted to methods of cheating on some of these logs. And you can find forums that talk about things like that. Again, not everybody does this, and we know that that's probably not the majority of people. I bet the majority are on the level. There's the minority of people that do, you know, try to, I guess, say doctor the logbooks just a little bit, even if it's an electronic logbook, and they find ways around it. They find a way to, you know, to skirt the law in a way that is profitable to them or to the company.
Mm-hmm.
It allows them to stay on the road longer, allows them to drive greater distances, to haul bigger loads, you know, whatever it happens to be. But again, not the majority that do that. And I think, you know, one other thing is that, you know, with all this talk about how, you know, what drives them is, you know, they've got, you know, they're against the clock. They're against the mileage. They're against the price of fuel. They're against a lot of different things, right?
Yeah.
You've heard rumors or tales of, you know, companies that hand out, you know, uppers to the drivers that are going to be on the road overnight along with their paycheck, you know, things like that, you know, like caffeine pills that, you know, keep them going.
Sure.
That's, again, the vast minority of trucking industry or trucking companies, I suppose, that would do something like that. Most of them, again, are on the up and up, and they want their drivers safe. They want the product safe. So they're going to take care of them in whatever they have to, way they have to. So essentially, it's just a bad apple situation. You know, there's one that spoils the whole group, but that's the one that gets the most press, right?
Right. Because the thing is, when you're doing a job like this correctly, then people aren't going to really hear about it.
No.
You know what I mean? The average, for instance, let's look at grocery stores, right? Especially given that so much food is perishable, that is a very time sensitive product to deliver. The average grocery shopper is not walking by the produce aisle and going, man, I'm sure glad that these people showed up on time. What they're doing is they're seeing maybe one story in the news about an isolated incident.
Yeah.
And then they're saying, oh, that is the rule.
Or they're not saying, you know, man, this lettuce sure is wilted, but I'm glad the truck driver got here safe. They're not saying that.
Unfortunately, they're not.
Yeah. I mean, it's too bad that that's not the case, right? You know, like, well, no one was injured, but, you know, this tomato looks like it's seen better days. Again, you know, truckers are sacrificing a lot, you know, in order to get that stuff to you on time, and they're trying to do it in the safest way possible. So, give them a little bit of leeway on the road. That's what we mean, really.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's a couple other things here that, you know, some of the questions, I guess, you know, I said early on, we were going to talk about some of the FAQs that people might have, you know, like when you're on the road, hey, why did that truck driver do that? That's the question, right? And let's talk about that in a moment, right after a word from our sponsor.
We're back. Scott, I'm glad you brought this up because, let me tell you, man, as longtime listeners know, we have been driving in Atlanta for years now, and traffic can be insane. You know, we rant about turn signals and following distance aside. It feels like it would be nerve-wracking to be driving a rig through a downtown area in traffic just because of the way you see people cut off trucks constantly.
Yeah.
The way that people will try to like edge into the blind spot. Don't get me started on those, hypermilers.
Well, but see, here's the thing. Like, you know, you mentioned cutting them off. So truckers feel that, you know, cars don't give them courtesy. Cars feel that truckers don't give them courtesy. It's kind of this back and forth thing, but maybe, you know, this article that I came across in a place called truckingtruth.com, and it's called, you know, why do truck drivers do that? That's the big question, I guess. Why do they do that? And it's written by an experienced truck driver. He goes by the name Trucker Mike on the site if you want to look up some of his other articles, but lots of experience. But it's kind of an honest view of the trucking industry and some friendly advice. And this article is more to, I think it's really more to people that don't drive trucks than to truckers themselves, because obviously they're the ones who encounter this every day, but it will allow you to understand why they do that. So why does a trucker, let's say, the first one here on the list is, you know, why do they ride next to each other and try to block traffic on the expressway? Well, it's not that they're trying to block traffic.
Right.
That's not what their goal is. And you may be thinking that, well, they're trying to, pace traffic. You know, they're trying to kind of set the law of the road. You know, that's not necessarily what they're doing. As Trucker Mike points out, you know, these trucks, a lot of them are governed at certain speeds. They can't go above, you know, whether that's 62 miles an hour or 64 miles an hour. And he uses that as an example because that comes into play here in just a bit. But let's say anywhere between 60 and 65 miles per hour, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a faster truck and a slower truck. And I don't know if you've ever driven a governed truck. Have you ever driven a governed vehicle?
No, I have not.
Well, you can think about this in a simple way, I guess, maybe. If you've ever driven a go-kart. mm-hmm. where on a go-kart track and you're thinking like, well, this is a long straight. Why can't I go any faster? That's the limit. You could right. be pushing the gas down as hard as you can.
But after a certain threshold.
It just stops.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't stop. It fails to progress any further, maybe. You know, that's the maximum speed. And these are set at 60, 65 in some cases. But when you have two trucks on the road that are governed at, let's say, as he said, 62 and 64, and they're next to each other, when one that's faster, the 64 mile an hour truck, tries to pass the 62 mile an hour truck, mm-hmm. you can imagine how slow that already is. But then you start to factor in other things, like maybe the road starts to rise slightly in front of them. You know, there's a little bit of an incline. And that means that even though the truck may have a faster governed speed, maybe it has a heavier load and that backs it down. So it's unable to climb the hill quite as quickly. So there's a point where they kind of even out. And that is so frustrating to, you know, us four wheelers, I guess, you know, the ones that are on the road thinking like, what are they doing? They're blocking, you know, the two lanes here. It's supposed to be a quick pass, right?
Right.
Doesn't happen that way. You can't pass truck with another truck that fast. So. You know, it's not that they're trying to be jerks. They're not trying to stick next to each other, you know, in some way to, you know, laughing at, you know, the people on the road. It's that it's a situation where it's unavoidable, really.
Right.
I mean, it's an unforeseen circumstance, you know, that the truck did rise or the truck has a heavier load and it can't get by faster. So again, it's not them trying to be jerks. They want to go faster, but they just can't.
Right. They're hard technological limits.
Yes, exactly right. And it's a situation that they don't like. They don't like driving next to other trucks, by the way, because there's not a whole lot of room there. They have to really be focused on staying in their lane, watching out for other vehicles around them that are passing, et cetera. So they don't like that situation as well. The next one is that they ask, why do truck drivers cut off cars? And I laugh, you know, just about at every one of these. Why do truck drivers cut off cars? And it's not that they're cutting off cars. It's because they're trying to take advantage of the situation while they can, because later on it's not going to be any better. It's always right. bad for trucks. How often are you going to find a 70-foot opening in traffic?
Yeah.
They have to take that shot when they've got it. And if there's an opening, they have to go for it if that's the lane that they need to be in. And it's, you know, oftentimes the space is small, but they have to make that decision because later there's just not going to be that opportunity. And to be frank, a lot of, you know, car drivers aren't going to give them the opportunity. Who wants to allow, you know, to stop in traffic and allow, you know, 80 feet to go in for, you know, to develop in front of you there? Because, you know, other cars are going to fill up that spot.
Yeah.
So if you allow 80 feet of space in front of you, you know, from a dead stop, that takes a while. And hopefully the truck's going to get in there. But not a lot of people are willing to do that.
You know, the rough part is, too, this has happened to multiple people, myself included, in a traffic jam. You're feeling, you know, hospitable, charitable.
Yeah.
And you say, I'm going to let this poor schmo who's just trying to get this freight liner through traffic, I'm going to let him get enough room to get in this lane.
Exactly.
But as soon as you create that space, like five BMWs swoop in.
It happens. It really does.
It does.
And so you're trying to be nice, but what happens is you end up being five cars behind and the truck's still not in. So that happens. But the author of this article points out that even if one person a day allows him into traffic, it just makes his day. Like, you know, it can just be a bright point, you know, that someone is watching out for him on the road because it doesn't happen very often. So yeah. If you get an opportunity to allow a truck in, as he points out, it's not going to slow you down all that much. I mean, you may be a couple of car lengths behind, but we know that doesn't amount to much when you finally get to your exit at all, really.
Yeah. And also, honestly, if you're already stuck in gridlock.
Yeah.
You're not changing the amount of time it's going to take you to get through.
No. And if you watch the aggressive behavior of people that are stuck in gridlock, it's sometimes funny because half the time you end up in front of that person, no matter what kind of effort they're putting, you know, putting forth to get, you know, to cut in between cars and, you know, try to dodge whatever kind of traffic they
right.
get into a faster lane. So as he says, you know, it doesn't really gain you a whole lot, and it can actually honestly, truly make a trucker's day to let them in, let them merge when it's necessary. So here's another one. Why do truckers get into the left lane even if they're not passing anybody? Now, this is an interesting one because a lot of people will wonder this.
Right.
The real truth behind this is they're not trying to block the fast lane or anything or slow everybody else down and laugh again. The thing is that they're taught to look very far down the road, and they've got this real high vantage point that most cars and trucks don't have. I mean, they're significantly higher than even some of the big trucks or SUVs. So you've got this great vantage point. They might see an emergency vehicle. They may see something in the road, some debris, mm-hmm. you know, some other situations going on, someone changing a tire that's down the road that you might not see yet. So if they see a hazard, as soon as they're able to get over, their training tells them that they're supposed to get over. And, you know, in larger cities where there are three lanes, the truck drivers are taught to use the center lane so that they have, you know, a direction to go either way should something happen. And that's called the Smith system. And the Smith system is something that they're taught in a defensive driving course. And a lot of drivers have to take these defensive driving courses in order to drive for whatever, you know, company that they're driving for. Most required, a lot of them required, I should say. They teach them that it is a lot safer to use that center lane again so that, you know, should something happen on the left or right, they've got a direction to go either way. They're not forced one way or the other, or just smashing into somebody. So, you know, if you've got a, if you see a truck in the middle lane and you've got a left or right lane, choose to pass on the left always, because they've got bigger blind spots on the right hand side. And those, you know, signs or stickers are on the back of that truck for a reason.
Right.
You know, those ones that say that if you can't see my mirrors, I can't see you. That's absolutely true. And, mm-hmm. and the blind spots on the right side are far greater than the blind spots on the left side of a truck. So, always pass trucks, especially trucks, on the left side if possible.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm actually, especially if I'm on a little two-lane road or something, I used to, until actually my uncle told me to knock it off, I used to be one of those people who would just wait for a passing opportunity and then just gun it to get around them. But now, you know, that I've mellowed out a little bit, I'm fine being behind them and giving them enough distance, because one author described semis as 60-foot long highway missiles. Yes. And you know, there's a lot of force there. So
there's a lot of weight to stop.
Right. So I try not to linger too close to any big rig, you know, mm-hmm. just because it's better for the operators if I stay out of the way.
You know what? That kind of touches on another item here on this list, and I'm going to jump ahead, you know, a little bit out of order, but it's okay, because we talked about weight and how hard it is to stop something like this, right? You know, it's like a missile on the road. A lot of people will think that, you know, the trucks have well, they have 18 wheels, they're going to have 18 brakes, right? Not the case. They do have 10 brakes, however. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have 10 brakes. So that's still a lot of brakes, but the problem is that means for a fully loaded truck, each brake has to stop something like 8,000 pounds. Now, think about that. I mean, your car is probably like, you know, 3,000 pounds or 3,500 pounds or something like that. You've got four disc brakes that stop that. Right. They've got 10 brakes that each have to stop 8,000 pounds. So, you can see that, you know, it's very difficult for them to stop. And they're also thinking about things like, you know, the load in the back, how it might shift if they have to slam on the brakes or, you know, make an abrupt maneuver. So, that's one of the reasons why, and this is the question here, is that why do trucks sometimes run yellow or even red lights? You know, they have a point of no return. They decide when it's safe to stop and when it's not safe to stop. You know, there's a point where they say, whatever happens here, I've got to go through there. And they may blow their horn, they may flash their lights or something, mm-hmm. but they're letting you know, I can't stop this rig in time safely. It's safer for me to continue on through. And hopefully everybody is paying enough attention to allow that to happen without any kind of incident. It doesn't always happen, but, again, that point of no return is something that each truck driver has to think of. And, you know, that also has to do with the turns, like the speed that they take turns.
Yeah.
You know, the stopping and, you know, how the loads are, you know, set up and everything in the back. So when they're on curves, give them a little bit of leeway in that, you know, they do have to take them a lot slower. You know, the posted signs that no one else pays attention to, you know, mm-hmm. in the cars, you know, 35 mile an hour turn or 25 mile an hour turn. Truckers will often take that at a, you know, even 10 miles an hour below that posted limit, because they understand that everything in the back is shifting so dramatically. And even if like the bottom box of a load, you know, a stack of produce gets crushed.
Right.
That means that the whole stack is then at risk for tipping over, and that could be a lot of money. And again, you know, sometimes, as I said, they're carrying, you know, $500,000 worth of produce. That could be a problem, I guess, if, you know, they open the gate or they open the door and a lot of that is crushed or destroyed and it's unusable. So, you know, it's in their best interest to keep things, you know, slow and steady and get mm-hmm. it there safe and, you know, all intact, I suppose. And you'd appreciate that too as a consumer, because, you know, the stuff gets to you undamaged.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And, oh, here's one that we had talked about on our road trip.
What's this?
We passed in the middle of the night, we passed so many trucks that were pulled off on the side of the road or on off ramps.
Uh-huh.
And we knew what was going on. There was a big storm that was happening. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. You know, truckers will often pull off in heavy storms if they know they're coming. And that's kind of a cue for other drivers to know there's some serious weather coming. But at night, a lot of truckers have to kind of find somewhere to pull their truck off. There's a huge shortage of parking, at least here in the United States, for trucks. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know this. I didn't realize that, you know, there just aren't enough truck stops. There just aren't enough even rest areas for trucks to pull over. You know, that sometimes they have designated sleeping areas for trucks, but in a lot of states and a lot of parts of the country, they don't. So they have to find wherever they can. And a lot of times that's on or off ramps, just on the side. And they have to sleep there. Just mm-hmm. just let the truck idle overnight. And it's not the most comfortable thing for them. It's dangerous. They don't like it, but it's something right. that they have to do because they can't find anywhere else to park. So if you see that happening, realize that they don't choose to be there. That's just where they end up. They have to end up, I suppose, overnight. And then the last one on this list, Ben, is something that, I don't know. This is something that we have talked about so many times. It's kind of a moral dilemma. Hmm. And this person that wrote this, again, Trucker Mike, writes in and says that, you know, there was a time when truckers were known as the Knights of the Highway. You know, they would help out anybody that was in a bad situation. They would sure. stop and pick up hitchhikers. They would help people with a flat tire, you know, whatever.
If they happened upon an accident.
Exactly. They would be sometimes the first responders because they're the ones on the scene. But that's not the case anymore. Now, a lot of companies actually have policies against stopping to assist motorists. So you would think that, you know, that those kind of, I don't know, the rules of the, not really the rules of the road, but the unspoken rules of the road, you know, that you help out a motorist that needs assistance. A lot of us adhere to that. You know, if you see somebody that needs a tire change, well, we've talked about this probably at length, if not in too much depth in other podcasts. So I'll skip over that. But as this guy points out, as Trucker Mike points out, a lot of times the cargo can be in the millions of dollars, you know, so, mm-hmm. It's easy to see why it's not a very smart move for a trucker to pull over in the middle of the night to help somebody that, you know, has a flat tire. So, you know, because it may not be that. It may be a setup.
Well, yeah, times are changing, man. The common practice of stopping to help somebody on a roadside has really dropped off in this country.
Yeah. And again, this is another one of those bad apple situations that, you know, a lot of people truly do need help. And again, he says, you know, if we see something like that, a lot of times we'll call and alert, you know, the local authorities that something's going on. There's a car broken down at this mile marker and, you know, go check it out and see if they need help. I can't stop. I'm unable to stop. But they do say if they witness an accident, you know, some companies have said, if you're not involved, don't stop. But if you're involved, of course you want to stop. But the other thing is, okay, there's all different levels of this too, Ben. It's that, you know, if they see something like that and someone's hurt, obviously, most of these guys are going to stop and assist in whatever the way they can. You know, they don't want to see anybody suffer. They don't want to see anybody that's, you know, going to die because they have to get their load to, you know, Walmart or Target or wherever it's going. But they also say that, you know, they have to keep their wits about them. They have to understand that, you know, maybe in some cases it's best for law enforcement to kind of take over and you know, to just alert the authorities or somebody that can do something that's not in a position that they're in. Mm-hmm. So this Knights of the, Knights of the Highway?
Yeah.
That code doesn't really apply anymore. But that's kind of sad that that's kind of gone away and, you know, the reason that that's gone away.
And speaking of code, camaraderie, and community, I would like to bring this, the last thing I have for today, for our intro to an inside look behind the curtain of the trucking industry. And it's this. Convoys. Not just an amazing song. Not just an okay movie. But the actual phenomenon of a convoy. So a lot of people know it through the song. Probably more than know the actual practice. A convoy is any group of vehicles that travel together to exploit the old truism about strength in numbers, safety in numbers, too.
Sure. So a convoy could be any type of vehicle, right?
Yeah, a convoy could be planes, it could be boats, it could be a bunch of guys on pogo sticks, man. It's still technically a convoy.
Okay.
And I have not seen a pogo stick convoy.
Nor have I.
I don't know if there's probably something like that.
It's probably out
like
there.
A pogo stick festival or something.
Sure.
I don't know. Let me know if it's in your town. I'll see if I can make it. But the long and short of it is this practice existed way before motor vehicles. Nowadays, at least in English, convoys are almost, if they're associated with something aside from, again, just an astonishing piece of music, then they are, I'm serious. Then they're going to be associated with tractor trailers. And this did come out of a move for protection because here's what happens. The United States, when they had a national 55 mile per hour speed limit 18-wheelers would become the prime targets of speed traps.
Ah, okay.
So in the film Convoy, the sheriff, who's played by Ernest Borgnine, mm-hmm. did I get his name correct?
I think so.
Okay. It was a little before my time.
Yeah.
But
oh, rub it in.
But one of the things – I couldn't help it. One of the things that the sheriff character does is goes on the CB pretending to be a trucker and telling people it's okay to speed so that he can bust them.
But Rubber Duck is on to him. That's yeah. Chris Christopherson, right?
That's right. Chris yeah. Christopherson. Yeah. Well, you know your stuff, man.
A little bit.
So the rationale here was that truckers already, even at this time, had really difficult schedules to keep because of the timeline.
Yeah.
And to reach the destination on time, just the way the math worked out, they had to go faster than 55. So the idea was that multiple rigs could run together, and if a speed trap occurred or the police chased them, they would only be able to get one at most. And then also, you can conserve fuel by drafting.
Yeah.
Just like hypermileage.
Sure.
Which, you know, if you're listening to this and you are a trucker, I hope you're enjoying the episode, and I hope no one's drafting off you, because that would drive me crazy.
Yeah, but you know what? Sometimes I think that, again, trucks from the same company will do that. They'll draft in a kind of a train, I guess.
Yeah.
So that, you know, that they can conserve fuel. They can move across at a faster rate. I've seen before where trucks from the same company are seemingly 3-4 feet apart, and they're just screaming down the highway. I've seen that. It's been a long time since I've seen it, because now it seems like in the area that we're in, there's just not enough open road to do something like that.
Right.
But I've seen that in the past when I was younger on, you know, road trips out west or wherever that, you know, they're just – it's hard to describe, but it does become almost like a train. It's like they're connected, but they're not connected.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so close, just so trusting that the other driver knows what they're doing. They're not anticipating any kind of abrupt stop. You know, they just know they've got open, free road ahead of them, and they're on their way. It's kind of a cool thing to witness, to see it. But, you know, the ones that I've seen have been very small. Not anything that, you know, like not 50 trucks in a row. I'm talking like, you know, 4 or 5 trucks at the most.
I've got one cool thing. So we focused on the U.S. for most of this episode.
Yeah.
There's one thing I just couldn't resist related to convoys. Okay.
What's that?
So in several European countries, there's special rights for marked convoys. They have to be treated like a single vehicle. So if you and our super producers and I are all driving in Norway, Greece, Italy, Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and a couple other places, then if you're in the lead and we go through an intersection as a marked convoy and the light changes, the rest of us still go.
No kidding.
No kidding.
That's not what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say that, you know, if one gets pulled over, they all get tickets. But it sounds like this is something that's it must be a common thing, right?
Well,
how do you know that there's 4 more trucks coming through that intersection when you see one?
They're marked. So they have like a uniform marking.
Oh.
So you can tell they're a gang. You can tell they're a clique.
So they've got tats.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or vests, maybe. They got the 1% vest on.
They've all got stupid hats.
Okay.
They've all got old hats.
Okay. Gotcha.
Right. Brought it back around.
Yeah.
So if other drivers overtake the convoy, you can't cut into it. If you're passing that last car, you have to pass the other 4 or 5 as well.
Oh, funeral rules, I guess.
Yeah,
maybe,
kind of.
Right? Like funeral procession rules, I should say.
Right. But that's more of a courtesy, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Not law.
Yeah. But this most commonly occurs, with the military. Like during the Cold War, most of these convoys would be military in nature,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, if you're a civilian driver and you see a bunch of clearly military vehicles going by, I think most people would already just sort of intuitively understand you shouldn't try to cut in the middle of that.
You know, I see that happen here on the U.S. highways a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, they're traveling between bases. You know, they've got all the Humvees.
Right.
And, or whatever types of vehicles they've got, you know, the fuel trucks, that type of thing that they can drive on highways. They're driving very slow, but they're in full gear, full military gear, and they're all traveling together, all camouflage vehicles or, you know, the tan vehicles or whatever. But yeah, there's no way I'm cutting in between a couple of Humvees, you know, with all these guys that are clearly from, you know, going from one base to the next base or, you know, where, whatever airport they're headed to or something. Yeah, there's something a little bit intimidating about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't want to disrupt that.
And NGOs can also exercise these rights. So it's not a super common thing. We have to have legal permission. We can't just all, like, slap a red stripe on the hood of our respective vehicles and then say, all right, we're a convoy now.
Yeah.
But how cool would that be?
Yeah, it would be cool.
So hopefully this has shed a little bit of light on the trucking industry for non-truckers. You know, some of the statistics and the numbers are pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I know that we've only kind of, you know, touched on a few of the, I guess maybe FAQs that you might have as you're driving down the highway, but we'll probably dive into, you know, some more of the, I guess mechanicals of semis and,
sure.
And some of the origin stories of some of the semi companies. Cause
yeah.
I'm sure that there's going to be some interesting ones. We just have to find them. We have to dig them out and find out what makes them really an intriguing story. What makes them interesting?
And here's where we're looking for your help. If you are associated with the trucking industry, if you are a trucker, and you have some stories or some things that you would like your fellow Car Stuff listeners to know, then find us on Facebook and Twitter where we're Car Stuff HSW. And you can also, while you're on the internet, check out every episode we've ever done on our website, carstuffshow.com. And there's a lot.
A lot.
You can, I think you, we're almost to the point where you can just type in any car name.
It seems like it. It's almost like a, like an encyclopedia.
That's getting there, man.
It's nice. It's kind of nice to be able to say that. You know, like we've touched on a lot, like so much that you can just about type in any word and something will come up that is related in some way.
Well, we've bumbled a few of those.
Well,
a
couple, sure. I mean, and it may be that, you know, here's the other thing. Like you can type in the words. You may not know that it's associated with it, but if you're able to keep this type of thing sorted out in your head, you may say like, oh yeah, you did mention this in that episode, mm-hmm. but it's not something that you could, maybe do a word search for in Google.
Right.
So that's the benefit of maybe listening to every single episode of Car Stuff. See, that's why we get people to listen to every single episode, Ben, so that they can kind of file it away and then can bring it up at a party or something, you know, like a little known fact or maybe mm-hmm. a spec. That's impressive to other, other people at that party.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's all it's good for. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a pretty good pitch, Scott.
Well, you know, that's kind of a weak pitch, but that would take you like 1,000 hours to go through all
that
stuff.
It would be a long time.
Yeah. I mean, it's close to 1,000 hours.
It would be a long, like.
Yeah.
You could get your pilot license multiple times.
We have listeners that have listened to the entire catalog.
Yeah.
From start to finish. Some that have got a late start to the game have gone back and listened to our classic episodes, I guess, yep. all the way through today. Man, I give them a lot of credit.
We should have some kind of award.
How would we ever prove it? How do we ever prove it?
Yeah, I don't know. This is getting complicated, but we'll work on it. Let us know if you have suggestions for that too.
And what would the award be?
That's a great idea. That's a great thing for us to figure out.
Oh, yeah.
Well, if you're asking me right now, I would say a convoy t-shirt, but I think maybe I'm just getting a little carried away.
How about a firm handshake?
A firm handshake? Let us know what you think the prize should be for checking out every episode. Let us know your experience in the world of trucking, and most importantly, if you would like to take a page from your fellow listeners' book and suggest a topic you would like us to cover in an upcoming episode, we're all ears. You can write to us directly. We are
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.